gentlemen. Hello, my name is Jason Leto, and this is PWP Radio right here tonight. PWP Radio going live, and I'm starting this show off on a little bit of a different note. I just want to send my thoughts and prayers out there to everybody affected by Hurricane Sandy. They're now calling her Superstorm Sandy, but this storm was serious, folks. It's a big deal, and a lot of lives were affected by this. Not only in the East Coast, but across the entire country. People's families were affected. Possessions were lost. There were deaths. And, you know, my thoughts and prayers go out to everybody affected. I'm lucky. I'm here in the Jersey Shore. I'm just a little bit away from Seaside Heights. And Seaside Heights is pretty much wiped out. Parts of Toms River, New Jersey are completely underwater. People are stuck in their homes. This is me telling anyone who's listening, if you need help out there, if you just happen to be listening, I know we're not the most popular show in the world, and I'll be the first one to admit that, we're still brand new, but if you need help out there, I'm ready to roll. I will help you. I'll do everything in my power to help you out in this time of need. Tonight in the show, we're going to be talking about WWE Hell in a Cell, WWE Monday Night Raw last night. And we're going to kick off our Halloween special. I've reserved a two-hour time slot here on Blog Talk Radio. We probably won't fill the entire 2 hours, but just in case, we have a live 2 hours for the show. So if you want to call in, the phone number is 760-888-5749. If you want to talk about anything tonight, I want this to be more of a free-flowing conversation. I'm not watching the Heat and Celtics. I'm sitting here by myself in my little studio, and we're just going to talk tonight. We're going to have a good time. We're going to try to keep it as positive as possible, but once again, just want to throw my thoughts and prayers out there to everybody affected by this storm. Now on with the show.
Welcome to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Aletto and Will TLD Vampidez.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. I've been trying to be in contact with Will TLD Vampidez practically all day here in the Jersey Shore. Pretty much cell phones are down. I got a few texts from Will. I've been trying to text him back. Not going through. I've been trying to call him. Hasn't worked. My cell phone service is completely shot. But I've been on Facebook all day, and I've been promoting the show tonight, and I hope some people come on in and listen live. If I got to do this by myself, I will do it by myself tonight, folks, because we are moving right along. It's been a great, well, maybe not great, but it's been a big 2 days in the wrestling business. Hell in a Cell was Sunday night, and that's when Hurricane Sandy really started to get going around here in the Jersey Shore, but I did not catch it live Sunday night, sadly. But however, I did go out of my way to download it during the storm. Somehow my internet stayed up, and that was great news. And I downloaded Hell in a Cell. I watched it yesterday. And I just got to say, you know, a lot of people are coming down hard on this show. A lot of people did not really enjoy it, but I guess I might be in the minority here. I really liked Hell in a Cell. I thought they did a good job this year. There was a build to the big matches. You know, I know the card wasn't full. It wasn't set in stone going in. But when you talk about what actually transpired on the show, it was pretty damn good. The wrestling was solid all night long. From, you know, Daniel Bryan and Kane, Team Hell No, taking on Team Road Scholars in what was a great technical match, I thought. And, you know, I got a little cough. You know, battling a little cough. I'm sorry about that, folks. If I cough a couple times tonight, my apologies. But that's what Team Road Scholars did not really lose their heat at all because they won by disqualification. And they get to continue this program with Team Hell No heading into the big Survivor Series match. But the first match on the card was Randy Orton taking on Alberto Del Rio. This feud has been building up for months now, it seems. Maybe a little over a month since the last pay-per-view was probably 6 weeks ago. So Randy Orton and Alberto Del Rio had a heated feud. This match was decent. I mean, it was kind of sloppy at times. There was one spot that Alberto Del Rio obviously fucked up, but I'm not going to come down on him for it because, you know, wrestlers every once in a while screw up a spot here and there, and I'm not the type of guy to really say, you know, fuck that guy for screwing up a spot or champ, you fucked up or whatever, because what they do out there is extremely difficult. But Randy Orton, you could tell, you looked at him, he was pretty pissed off. He was pretty ticked. Alberto Del Rio went to the top rope, kind of lost his balance, didn't jump at the right time, kind of fell off a little bit, and the spot was messed up. But anyway, it was a cool ending. Alberto Del Rio attempts to hit that springboard off the top rope in Zaguri that he's really, really good at doing. It just looks like an extremely hard move to pull off. But Orton intercepts it and turns into an RKO. It was a great finish. Obviously, the feud is continuing. I thought this was the blow-off. You know, Orton wins. I had predicted, I guess I'm 0-1, I had predicted that Alberto Del Rio would win this match, and it would start building towards a Randy Orton heel turn, which I'm telling you, folks, I guarantee you 99% of the people out there are clamoring for it, begging for Randy Orton to turn heel, because, let's face it, Randy Orton has been kind of lame as of late. There's no denying that. His character is just stale, and he's been a babyface since WrestleMania 26, practically. Yeah, pretty much WrestleMania 26, and it's long enough. You know, turn him heel. He's a natural heel. As JBL said, something along the lines of, every wrestler out there wants to be Randy Orton. I don't know about that, but when he's on the top of his game, there's really nobody better than Randy Orton. He might not be the best talker. He's kind of monotone, but when he is hitting on all cylinders, he's absolutely fantastic out there. So I was 0-1 here. Didn't select Randy Orton, but he picked up the victory. Moving on with the card. Moving along here. A card, a match that was not signed, but it was rumored to be taking place last week on Raw. Justin Gabriel picked up a huge win in a non-title match over Antonio Cesaro. They went one-on-one with the title on the line. And, folks, if you know me, you know I'm a big fan of Cesaro. The former Claudio Castagnoli. I've been calling for his push for a long, long, long time, and it looks like it's happening. He's been on a roll, so to speak, and he just looked great against Justin Gabriel. They pulled off a good match. I mean, some people would say it's filler. Some people would say, you know, that they shouldn't book a match like this just on the fly. They should give it some build-up and some time and actually announce it. But I disagree. This was a treat for me, and Cesaro picked up the big win. Brutal European uppercut on Justin Gabriel, who was flying over the top rope. Absolutely vicious. Rolls him into the ring. It was academic. Pretty good match. Solid. I like the fact that they pushed a guy like Gabriel, gave him that chance to have a pay-per-view match with Antonio Cesaro for the United States title. Listen, folks, the IWC, Internet Wrestling Community, and I've talked about it over and over again, no matter what happens, you're going to be negative. And that's fine. That's just the way it's structured. I've been a member of the IWC, so to speak, since 1997. We've been criticizing wrestling for all these years. And to criticize Antonio Cesaro and Justin Gabriel for just being a filler match and not being booked in advance and yada, yada, and being boring is bullshit. Because let's face it, we've been clamoring for these titles to have some kind of focus and meaning. I'm talking the United States and the Intercontinental title. Both were defended last night, and I'm glad Cesaro picked up the win, and he's holding it, trying to bring prestige back to that championship, and, you know, it was great. I enjoyed it. So this is 2-for-2 on me on good matches. I thought both of these matches delivered, and let's go for 3-for-3 because Kofi Kingston and The Miz put on a hell of a show. It was an old-school wrestling match, and that's what you like to see. I mean, this match, they've wrestled a couple times in the past few weeks. You know, I thought maybe The Miz would get the belt back. I know Will and John, who, speaking of John, I just want to say my condolences go out to John. I'm sidetracked a little bit here, but John had a death in the family. He will not be joining us tonight. And our condolences are for you, John. And, you know, come back whenever you want. If you can call in tonight, go for it. If you can, it's fine. We appreciate your contributions, and I hope, you know, everything's okay in this tough time. So back to Intercontinental title match. Kofi picks up the win over The Miz. But let me tell you what, The Miz really looked like a great heel in this match. And let's just nip it in the bud right here before I get these these Miz fans on my ass. I know I've been a hater of the Miz. That's something I will admit day in and day out, but he delivered in this match. He really did a good job pulling the knee pad off of Kofi, pulling the boot off, exposing the knee. It's something that doesn't happen in wrestling anymore. It's old school. It's what I like about professional wrestling. It kind of had that NWA vibe to it where you're really focusing on a body part and going after it, and the Miz did it, and he did it well. Kofi ends up picking the win with a Trouble in Paradise out of fucking nowhere. But hey, that's how it is. You know, Kofi Kingston, they're trying to build him up to be a main player on the roster. He's been a guy who he's been around for a few years, and his pushes come and go. He's up and down the ladder. Kind of reminds you of CM Punk in his early days in the WWE, except, you know, Kofi Kingston is not CM Punk. I'm not trying to say that, but the way his push has been going, it's been back and forth, up and down. It's kind of similar. Will Kofi ever get a shot at the WWE gold or the World Heavyweight gold? We'll have to find out, you know. In the future, I think Kofi will be a great contender. So once again, folks, I'm without a co-host tonight. If you want to call in and talk to me, talk with me, please call 760-888-5749. You can hit up Twitter, hashtag PWP Radio, and at PW Powerhouse. If you're not following me, follow me. If you want to talk to me on that, I'll be on Twitter all night long. And check us out on Facebook. We have a great Facebook community at facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse or facebook.com/groups/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. We're constantly talking wrestling. We're constantly having positive and negative conversations on the world of professional wrestling. And don't forget, ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Please check that out as well. So moving right along with WWE Hell in a Cell, another match that I guess is filler. You know, some people said that they don't enjoy matches that have no build. But this feud has been going on for a little while, on and off. It's tag team wrestling, folks. Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara defeat the Primetime Players. And once again, we want to focus on tag team wrestling. I know I'm not going in order of the card, folks, so just bear with me. I'm just skipping around here. I'm trying to focus on the big matches later. But Mysterio, Sin Cara defeat the Primetime Players. Adds more heat to the tag division. Solid match. Once again, right now I'm saying, you know, Hell in a Cell's 4-for-4 in good matches. Sin Cara damn near killed himself. What else is new? We're used to seeing that out of Sin Cara, and the Primetime Players look pretty good. They look solid once again in a tag team action. They've got charisma, and I don't expect their push to really start developing for a while. I mean, they're out there, they're getting their legs, they're starting to get some momentum little by little. It's not good to rush pushes like this. A team like the Primetime Players, Darren Young's been out there for a while, great young talent. Titus O'Neil's a big dude, good look, got charisma. Don't rush their push, you know, and that's exactly what WWE is doing. They're handling it the right way. Granted, if their former manager, AW, would have stuck around, maybe they would have been on the fast track to the WWE tag team titles. Maybe they would be the ones that'd be challenging Team Hell No, or vice versa tonight at Hell in a Cell. But regardless, they lost this match. But it doesn't really kill their momentum because Rey Mysterio is a bona fide main eventer, been around the block for a long time. And Sin Cara is a guy that, you know, Triple H is high on. We all know he's his boy. So, excuse me, cough again. So Rey and Cara pick up the victory, and it's obvious that their tag team, it's brewing. You know, they've been doing really well as of late, but we know where it's headed. We know it's headed to eventual one-on-one match between the two. I hope WWE doesn't blow their load on this, so to speak, and split them up and just give us the match on Raw. They really need to build this up to WrestleMania. I'm predicting it now, as many people are. Sin Cara versus Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania. Hell, maybe it'll be mask versus mask. That'd be fucking awesome. But I'm not seeing how the hatred could get that high and boil over. I think it'll just be probably one-on-one. Fantastic match. But there we go. Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara over the Primetime Players. WWE Divas Championship match. I know this was, again, later in the card, but Eve defeats Layla and Caitlyn. This match really gives a shit, really. I mean, Eve obviously is the main focus point of the Divas division right now. I have a feeling with AJ getting back to the mix, maybe she'll try to go after the Divas title. WWE is high on AJ. Hell, I'm high on AJ. I fucking love AJ. I'll be the first one to admit it. A lot of you guys out there that know me know that I'm always backing AJ. And you guys think she looks like a 13-year-old girl, and that's fine, but I think she's gorgeous. So AJ, Eve, that's my prediction for a big Divas title match. Hell, I'm going to say it happens at WrestleMania because WWE loves Eve. So my prediction right now, Eve versus AJ, WrestleMania 29 in Eve's hometown of New Jersey. So Eve picks up the win. I think Layla's going to be pushed out of that title picture for a while, second straight month where she does not win the gold. So Eve wins. She's going to continue getting a push. And that's that, all right? Next up on the card, the two biggest matches of the night. Well, let's say three biggest matches of the night. I kind of mentioned before Rhodes Scholars versus Hell No. You know, let's just go back to this a little bit. Daniel Bryan still on top of his game. Kane still on top of his game. The charisma between the two has been absolutely extraordinary. It's just not going to end, and I'm glad it's not going to end. I think they should keep building it up, build up the heat, build up a possible breakup. Just tease it every single week. I think that would be awesome. Both guys are over. I think Daniel Bryan's officially a babyface again, which is pretty cool, although his character has not changed. So Team Hell No retains the WWE Tag Team Championships from Team Rhodes Scholars and its qualification. So anyway, here we go. Big Show. This was awesome. This was absolutely awesome. Big Show finally, thank God, takes the belt away from fucking Sheamus. It is absolutely awesome. I am so fucking glad. And I'm just going to throw, I got a tweet, folks. I got a tweet from our boy, at Real Crazy Bill. Bill Shannon, he's a writer on the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse website. And I'm going to give you guys his tweet right now. He writes to me, how many times will everyone try to tell me that AJ's hometown is New Jersey? Hashtag stop it. LOL. All right, Bill. Yeah, you're listening, buddy. AJ's hometown is New Jersey. She's a hometown girl. I'm a Jersey boy. I think, you know, maybe if I know I got a girlfriend, I love her to death. But, hey, if AJ and I cross paths, you never know. But I'm saying, you know, I'm still going to say she gets the shot at the Divas title where she ultimately wins it in her hometown in New Jersey. It's going to happen, folks. Mark on it, you know. Take my word. But, anyway, back to Big Show and Sheamus. Great match. I mean, I'm going to tell you, hard-hitting. Sheamus has been delivering as World Heavyweight Champion in the ring. I say it week in and week out. I'm not a fan of his character outside the ring. He tries to be funny, but he's really not. I mean, this title reign needed to end, and it did. Big Show hit him with a knockout punch twice in the match, and it was just awesome. I'm glad Big Show won. A lot of people out there, I know you're fans of this style of wrestling, that Ring of Honor. And don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of it too, but that Ring of Honor shows you where it's, you know, little guys fighting and everything. But Big Show is a marketable world heavyweight champion. He is going to go out there and give it his all week in and week out. And hell, maybe Sheamus eventually wins it back from him. But Big Show is the right guy to hold the championship right now. He's always a transitional champion, folks. So don't really get ahead of yourselves. Don't think this is the end of the world for the World Heavyweight Championship. Big Show is a transitional champion, and somebody will beat him for it before WrestleMania, banking it right now. I know I'm going to say it was either John or Seth on PWP Radio tomorrow night. Oh, you didn't know, Radio News and Rumors. One of those two predicted that Ryback would win the Royal Rumble and go on to face the World Heavyweight Champion at WrestleMania. Maybe it's going to be Big Show. Maybe that's going to be a marquee match, Big Show versus Ryback. Doesn't sound like it would be too fucking awesome on the eyes, but, you know, who knows with WWE. That would be, for WrestleMania, that's a huge matchup. You know, the gigantic powerhouse against the big fat bastard, Big Show. So, Big Show wins. Solid outing again. So far, I think the card has been tremendous. I mean, all the matches have been good, except for maybe the Divas match was kind of boring, but here we go. This is where they lost me, folks. It wasn't the worst Hell in a Cell match in history, but it was damn close. I mean, I was kind of enjoying the thought of CM Punk versus Ryback at in a Hell in a Cell match. I mean, I thought it would be cool psychologically with Ryback chasing Punk around the cell, Ryback using the cell in different ways to beat Punk. And he did, kind of. But they didn't utilize it to the point that I wanted to see. I mean, CM Punk, he cheated, got some shots with weapons on Ryback. Ryback no-sold him. It was pretty much what I thought it was going to be, except I really think they should have brought a little more psychological pull into it. Maybe Paul Heyman gets involved. Maybe recreate that spot from Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker where Heyman was at the cage. Undertaker reached through and grabbed him by the tie and pulled him into the cage. I think that would be cool. But the match didn't go too long, and I just really wasn't a fan of the ending. You know, I'm usually the type of guy, the type of fan that enjoys endings like this where, you know, you keep an open-ended storyline and saga. I'm not sure what took place in WWE main event tonight. I heard that the referee, Maddox, I believe his name is, was going to be live on WWE main event. But anyway, what transpired here was just pretty much a cop-out. You know, I could see them backstage not knowing what to do. You don't want to take the belt off of Punk, obviously, and give it to Ryback. And you don't want Ryback to squash Punk, so you need to keep the heat in both directions. So you pull a screw job, but I would have personally liked to see a run-in. I mean, we were talking about Brock Lesnar possibly running in. We were talking about Mark Henry possibly running in. Anybody could have ran in, ripped the cage door off, whatever, laid waste to Ryback. I think that would have been good enough. I was even expecting a possible, like, quick pin from CM Punk. I mean, how hard would that have been if Ryback tries the shell shock or something and Punk just out of the blue pulls a small package out of it or something along those lines and defeats Ryback like that in just a fluke, a complete fluke? I don't think you would have lost a lot of heat on Punk. I don't think you would have lost any heat on Ryback. But going with this cop-out, dusty finish, you know, I don't know. It, to me, it was just lazy booking. And that's what we've been used to, folks, with wrestling in general. I mean, Ring of Honor's been lazy. TNA got better for a while, but eventually they usually fall into their laziness of their booking. And WWE is always lazy booking, and this showed you why. They just did not know what to do, you know? So, however, post-match, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fucking cool, man. They climbed the giant cell. Now, we've seen people on top of the Hell in a Cell before, but we've never seen anybody on top of that Hell in a Cell before. That Hell in a Cell is fucking huge. And Punk and Ryback went up there. And don't get me wrong, folks. I was watching it. I knew nothing catastrophic happened because that would have been huge news. And I would have found out about it somehow through social media. Somebody would have hit me up because, I watched it yesterday. But seeing Ryback up there with Punk and hitting a shell shock on him, that was cool. That was a cool moment. You have to admit, I mean, it really kept Ryback strong after his first loss, but it was just a cool visual. It was something that you're going to remember. The Feed Me More chant has been great for Ryback. It's an easy chant. I give WWE a lot of credit in marketing this character, doing it in an easy way where you know, children can kind of catch on to it, adults can catch on to it. Ryback is this beast of a man. He's gigantic, and he's not the dude you want to be trapped in a cell with, and that's where WWE lost me because they didn't use Punk in a way where they really make you believe that. Punk, he's the best in the business, folks. I'll say it right now. Him and Daniel Bryan, two best in the business. I'll give Punk the slight edge since he's a champion of the world. But CM Punk retains his championship at Hell in a Cell. And it was the right way to go. I predicted that. But I did also predict Brock Lesnar would run out, and I was fucking dead wrong. So once again, if you're listening, please give a call, 760-888-5749. I'll talk to you about anything tonight, folks. We want this to be a free-flowing conversation. And just get in. You know, if you're watching the NBA, I don't blame you. I'd be watching it, too, if I didn't have a radio show. But we got a lot to talk about. We're about to jump into Monday Night Raw. We're about to jump into the best Halloween moments in wrestling history. That'll be coming up soon. And there's a lot of them out there, folks. And there's one that I guarantee you won't think of, that I'm going to think of, that was not only one of the best Halloween moments in history, one of the biggest Halloween moments in history, but one of the biggest moments in wrestling history. And it's something that kind of flew under the radar, but we're going to talk about that a little later. Right now, I'm going to take a short break because I'm on my own here, and you're probably sick of hearing me, so we're going to go to our song of the day, which is one of my favorite wrestlers' short-lived theme song in WWE. I really wish they would bring it back. So I'm going to shut up right now, get something to drink. Please call in 760-888-5749. Hit me up on Twitter at PW Powerhouse. PWP Radio continues after this.
He's a man.
Times tonight, folks. I'm on my own hosting the show. There's, as you know, Hurricane Sandy has devastated the East Coast. I am lucky as all hell. Talked about it a bit earlier. Everything surrounding me is completely destroyed. Even down the block, there are trees down. There are fucking power lines down, electric poles down. Like, everything is destroyed. Seaside Heights is completely destroyed. I know Midway Steakhouse is underwater. The pier, there are rides in the ocean. I'm not sure about my former employee, Corncastle Amusements. I just quit that job because they fucked me over. But I just quit that job recently, and I'm not sure how they're doing over there. But my thoughts and prayers are with my coworkers, who I haven't been in touch with in a while. So I hope everybody's all right out there on here in the Jersey Shore. If you need my help, I'm open to help you out. So please hit me up at PW Powerhouse on Facebook, whatever. I'm here to help anybody who needs it. So, yeah, so Will's not with me tonight. I'm not sure what his deal is. I've been trying to talk to him all day. We haven't been able to be in contact, so that sucks. And if you want to call in, I do need help. I do need a co-host, so please, 760-888-5749. Call on in to PWP Radio. Let's talk. Let's talk about wrestling. Let's talk about life. Let's talk about whatever you want to talk about tonight. I got, you know, another hour and a half left in the show, and I'm going solo. So here we go. Monday Night Raw last night. Now, this was a challenge because Hurricane Sandy hit me pretty fucking hard yesterday, and the wind was insane. The power kept going out on and off throughout Monday Night Raw. So I'll be the first to admit I did not catch the entire show. However, due to the internet being up a lot of the time and the power going on and off, like I said, I was able to catch part of it streaming on the internet, which I hate to admit because streaming's bad. But I did catch most of the show. I went back and I watched highlights. I read the results, read the reviews, read what people had to say about the show. And quite frankly, I feel like most people didn't enjoy it. It seems like it was kind of split. Some people thought it was entertaining. Some people liked the way it was going. And others just thought it was going in the wrong direction. A horrible Monday Night Raw, some people thought it was. So we're going to start off, and I want to talk a little bit about Mick Foley and CM Punk. I was lucky enough to be able to catch this promo. And let me tell you, folks, Mick Foley's still one of the best promo men in the business. I really hope that you know, the young wrestlers in the WWE locker room on the independent scene. I really hope they listen to Mick Foley when he does interviews, because he's the man. He's got a lot of experience with it. He knows what he's doing. He goes from the heart. You can tell he gets emotion involved. And still, to this day, he's one of the best in the business. And seeing him and Punk go back and forth on the mic is absolutely fantastic. Now, we're going to stick with this entire program, because later on in the night, we found out, you know, Foley early on challenged Punk to the Survivor Series match. And just everybody thought that Foley was going to be wrestling in the match, which everybody really, really wants to see. I know I do. I always like when Mick Foley gets in there, regardless if he can't really walk anymore, whatever. He can still pull off some certain spots that nobody else does. And it's always good to see, you know, one of my all-time favorites back in there. But they pull a swerve on us at the end. The teams themselves were very, very predictable. I was sitting with my buddy Nick Orn, and who's also a member of the team PWP. But I'm sitting with Nick, and we're watching it. And, you know, we kind of predicted each guy that was going to be on each team. It was pretty fucking easy. And they just took every feud that was happening at Hell in a Cell and just continued it. And that's typical WWE booking. It's how they do things. And, you know, both teams are stacked. So it went pretty well. I mean, but the swerve at the end with Ryback coming out, Foley saying, I'm not going to be in the match. That was very disappointing to me. I mean, we were wondering, hey, where's Ryback? What's his involvement going to be? But, you know, I guess WWE decided to try with the swerve and give us Ryback instead of Foley. Yeah, it's a damn shame. We know Foley's going to get involved physically somehow, and I guarantee you it's going to be him getting his ass kicked, because that's what he's best at. And I really hope the Punk vs. Foley match does happen, because, like I stated, we do need that moment from Punk. We do need that beat the shit out of Mick Foley moment like Randy Orton had in the past, Edge had in the past, Triple H had numerous times over his years, to really get him over as a dominant heel. I think Punk needs that, and it would be fucking awesome if it happened. So, yeah, you know, Punk vs. Foley would be a great match. I think that would probably be awesome on a pay-per-view. Who knows what's going to happen, but it's good. It's booked for Survivor Series 5-on-5. It's going to be interesting. I think it'll be one of the more entertaining matches of the night. I'm a fan of these Survivor Series matches, and I hope they add at least one more to the card, but they should add it with a bunch of mid-card guys who are kind of on the cusp, like the three-man band, you know, somebody like Justin Gabriel should be involved, you know, whatever. Wade Barrett should probably be the captain. I won Survivor Series last year. There was a really cool 5-on-5 match, and they got to do that again. They need a couple of them on the card. But moving along with Raw, we had Ryback destroy JTG, which isn't really something that, you know, is a surprise. I got to say, I missed. I didn't see Randy Orton versus Wade Barrett. I see that Orton defeated Barrett. If you want to talk about this match and what it means for both guys, please call in. Help a brother out tonight if you're listening. 760-888-5749. Randy Orton defeated Wade Barrett live on Monday Night Raw, even with you know, Wade Barrett gaining some momentum with his new finisher and, excuse me, kind of his new gimmick. Randy Orton still defeats him, and I guess it's a step in the wrong direction for Wade Barrett, which WWE does not seem to know what to do with the guy right now. If it was up to me, I'd probably stick him with Paul Heyman and Punk. I would really like to see a reincarnation of the Dangerous Alliance. Could you imagine if you had, like, Wade Barrett, Antonio Cesaro, you know, even, I kind of don't want to put Alberto Del Rio in it, but, you know, Wade Barrett, Cesaro, CM Punk, Brock Lesnar, if you had those four with Paul Heyman backing it up, that would be an awesome sight to see. I mean, I would love to see Barrett and Cesaro be a tag team. If both these guys, if their singles pushes aren't working out in a few months, you know, tag them up. Why the hell not? They're two fantastic talents, and you're trying to get the tag division over. Hopefully by WrestleMania, the tag division really means something, and everybody's clamoring to see a big match at the big show. So who knows what's going to happen, you know? Let's just wait and see. Speaking of that, there was a tag team championship match, which I did catch. The primetime players got a shot, which is like, you know, I don't know if it was a title shot, but they still got a shot at the champions. Hell No defeats the primetime players. Who's the tag team champions? We still don't know. Is it Daniel Bryan? Is it Kane? This is a saga that just doesn't seem to end. But I'm glad it's not, because it is fucking entertaining, like I stated earlier. So there it is, Team Hell No over the primetime players. Now, I really want to talk a little bit about this AJ, John Cena, Vicky Guerrero story. I mean, what exactly is going on? It is a complete and utter ripoff of what TNA did just a few months ago. And everybody fucking hated the Claire Lynch storyline. And if WWE didn't have their head up their ass, they would have gone to the message boards. You know, have some intern do this. Just go out there and look at how the fans react to this kind of story and see that it's not good. I don't know anybody besides probably Toph who likes everything TNA. And, you know, if you're listening, Toph, you know, I'm talking to you, pal. I don't know anybody who really enjoyed the AJ Styles Claire Lynch story. And it seems like they're doing this and they're forcing it down our throats. You know, John Cena does not need to be involved in a love triangle or a love scenario with AJ Lee. It's just it's ridiculous. Cena is your flag bearer, the guy who's, you know, your main, he's your money tree, you know. He's the guy that makes it happen for you, and you're sticking him in this kind of, like, sideshow storyline. Maybe it's a good way to get Dolph Ziggler over. I mean, if they book Ziggler versus Cena, or maybe have Team Cena versus Team Ziggler in a Survivor Series match, I think that would be a cool way to go. But you don't need this angle. I get you need something for Vicky Guerrero to bust balls on to just be the heel and everything, but she's trying to stick it to AJ. That's obvious. Where is this going to go? I don't know. Is it going to turn out that Cena was fucking AJ in a hotel room? Really? Like, PGTV, and you're having John Cena bang AJ in a hotel room? I don't think it's going to go that way. You know, Cena's your like I said before, your money guy, and you're not going to put him in that kind of story. So somehow, some way or another, Vicky Guerrero is going to get fired for these false accusations, just like what happened in TNA, where it came out that AJ Styles was perfectly clean and innocent and yada, yada, yada. So Vicky Guerrero is going to, it's going to turn out she's lying completely. We know where this is going to go. What happens along the way? I don't know, man. WWE is tricky. And it just seems to be like they constantly book themselves in the corners, and this might be one at a time. You know, we'll see what happens. I mean, John Cena's your go-to guy. Once again, if you want to call and talk about this, please hit me up, 760-888-5749. I know a lot of people out there don't have power, don't have internet. It's okay, folks. I'm a trooper. I have power. I have internet. So I am fucking going at it solo tonight. I don't care. PWP Radio, the show will go on. If you want to talk to me about anything, it's going to be a free-flowing conversation. Right now, it's been a one-way conversation. Nobody's called in. That's fine. But if you'd like to call, please give me a call. Hit me up on Twitter. Do what you have to do to get yourself involved. And, you know, we're here at PWP Radio. We're keeping it going. We're entertaining the masses. We're entertaining the crowd. And I want to know what you think about WWE Raw, what you think about this John Cena, AJ Lee, Vicky Guerrero love story. Excuse me. Will it continue? Will it go in the direction it's going? Next up on the show, I want to talk about is Kofi Kingston defeating the United States champion. You know, Kofi's the IZ champ. Tony Cesaro is the U.S. champ. And Kofi took the win by disqualification. Cesaro took the easy way out, folks. That's all there is to it. Title wasn't a title versus title match, but the two champions played each other. When this kind of match happens, I really believe that it should be a lot bigger of a deal. But considering it's happened time and time again in the past, you know, I guess it doesn't really matter anymore. They've just beat this concept to death. And Kofi wins by disqualification. I can lie to you, folks, I didn't see this match. This was a part of time. Power was out at my house here on the Jersey Shore. So moving along with Raw, something I did see was the three-man band. Heath Slater, Jinder Mahal, Drew McIntyre. Cool little interview segment. Speaking of the segment, Kurt Angle today tweeted that WWE is blatantly ripping off Eric Bischoff's innovative concept of this multi-angle camera, whatever the fuck, backstage segment that TNA does often. And, you know, Kurt's got a point. It's similar to what TNA does. But this is wrestling, folks. You're going to rip each other off nonstop. It always happens. It doesn't happen in wrestling. It happens in every aspect of the fucking world, business, whatever. People rip each other off. They knock each other off all the time. And this is no different. You know, the the three-man band seems to be working. I mean, that segment was funny, the backstage segment. And they had a match where Heath Slater and Jinder Mahal defeated Team Cobra. Now I'm going to talk to you about this for a second. I'm sick of this team whatever, team this, team that. Why can't you just call him Cobra? Why can't you just call him Zack Ryder and Santino Marella? Whatever the fuck. You know, Team Cobra, that's absolutely ridiculous. Anyway, I'm glad three-man band is keeping up the momentum. And they take a victory on Raw, and it seems like they're winning lately. It's been pretty good for the 3MB, for Heath Slater. Drew McIntyre is getting a push once again. Jinder Mahal doesn't seem to fit in, but that is the entire point. So, awesome. Now, I'd just like to throw out farewell to Beth Phoenix, who's been the best women's wrestler on the planet over the last few years. If you agree or disagree, please call in and talk to me about this, because I'm not a huge fan of women's wrestling. I don't go out of my way to watch Shimmer or Chick Fight or Bombshell, whatever the hell's out there, or what's the other one, Shine. I don't really watch these women's matches. But but Beth Phoenix in the WWE has been the most consistent, best women's wrestler for a long amount of time. And last night on Raw was her final appearance. For now, anyway, on Monday Night Raw, she was fired by Vicky Guerrero after she first lost to AJ. Match restarted. She defeated AJ. Vicky Guerrero fired her because of, I guess, she had to restart the match and it didn't look good. But we all know Phoenix has been on her way out for a while. She's finished up her dates. If you look on Twitter, she's got some backstage photos with herself and her real-life boyfriend, Edge, Adam Copeland, and her and her one of her real-life good friends, Natty Neidhart. So Beth Phoenix is done in the WWE. Farewell to Beth. If she doesn't have to work ever again, good for her. I mean, I think she and Edge can go on the road together, work independent shows, work conventions, make a ton of money. And like I stated before, there are these women promotions out there like Shimmer, Shine, Chick Fight, and she'd fit right into any main event. You could fight once a month, wrestle once a month, and make yourself a nice piece of change. You can go to these conventions, like I said, sign autographs, and Edge is probably expensive. I mean, it's probably a lot of money to book Edge. So I'm just saying these two are going to be great. I'm sure they got a lot of money in the bank. Good for them. Congratulations to Beth Phoenix on a fantastic WWE career. Absolutely awesome. But it sucks to see her go. So, all right. Doing this solo tonight. Not as easy as it looks. You know, Sheamus beat the shit out of the Big Show. Yada, yada, yada. You know, I guess this feud's going to continue. What else are you going to do with Sheamus, folks? I mean, he's been the World Heavyweight Championship for WrestleMania. Loses it at Hell in a Cell. It's obvious he's going to continue to go after the World Heavyweight title. They're probably going to pull a last man standing match where, you know, it's going to really be the knockout punch against the bro kick. Maybe they'll pull a traditional Survivor Series match at Survivor Series where both guys head up a team. But I think they should go singles route. You need a championship match on this card. So my prediction is Sheamus versus Big Show once again for the World Heavyweight title. I would pull a gimmick right now. I'd put a last man standing match on them right now to add to this card to give a little more of a dynamic to it. And then heading into TLC in December, put that belt up there, man. Have them fight in a TLC match. Have Big Show bust out that huge ladder. There are many ways you can go with this feud. It's a match that hasn't happened before Hell in a Cell. It's a new feud. It's, you know, these matches aren't going to be pretty, but let's give Sheamus credit where credit's due, man. He hit that white noise move on the Big Show, which just looks to be, it was just a feat of strength. It was really, really impressive. I was shocked at Hell in a Cell when he hit it on him. It came out of fucking nowhere, and the Big Show's a huge man, and it can't be easy. And Sheamus is strong, so that was a great feat of strength. Did it again on Raw. Really cool to see. That, you know, seems to be continuing, and that's the right move. You know, continue that, have them fight for the belt. You know, Rhodes Scholars continues their roles they've been on. They defeated Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara. Rhodes Scholars they're hitting their stride right now. Two great singles competitors. I'm going to say it. Damian Sandow is great. He is an old-school heel, so is Cody, but they've got this old-school feel to them, and that is awesome. I'm a big fan of the old-school. If you know me, I love my old ECW, my old NWA. I'll sit there and I'll watch 1988 NWA all day long. because I love old school wrestling. Old school heels are where it's at. Damian Sandow is that old school heel. He's an awesome cross between Lanny Poffo and Mr. Perfect. I mean, I hate to, since those guys are so intertwined, you know, you put those guys together, maybe that's who you get. You know, Damian Sandow's been awesome, and Cody Rhodes continues to deliver. A loss for Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara after the big one on pay-per-view. I don't know when the chinks in the armor are gonna come for Cara and Mysterio, but eventually it's going to happen, and maybe this was a way to get the ball rolling on that. So moving right along, I mean, Alberto Del Rio once again fights a jobber. Well, I hate calling Justin Gabriel a jobber, but he lost at the pay-per-view. He lost last night on Raw to Alberto Del Rio. I feel like the push for Alberto just won't end, folks. When is WWE going to get the hint that it just doesn't seem to be working? He needs a change in character. I'm not saying turn a babyface because that won't work, but something needs to change with him, man. He needs to be maybe a little more ruthless, maybe ditch Ricardo Rodriguez. Something's got to change because it just doesn't seem to be working for me. If it works for you, hey, call me up. Let's talk about it. 760-888-5749. I'm dying for your phone call tonight, folks. I'm doing this on my own. Where's my PWP community at? Give me a call. I'm looking for a co-host, looking for some help. Please call in and talk to me about, you know, Raw, Hell in a Cell, TNA, free-flowing conversation tonight. But I guess that about does it for Raw. You know, I talked to you about the main event, the 5-on-5, which is going to take place Survivor Series. Talked to you about Sheamus and Big Show. We've got some more time left in the show, and I've promised you all night that we will talk about the best Halloween moments in professional wrestling history, and that is coming up next. I'm going to hit you guys with another song. This is from, you know, the PWP band, the band that is responsible for our theme song. They're called the Oceanaires. My good friend Jesse is a member of the band. Please support them on Facebook at facebook.com/TheOceanairsMusic. And this will be a song from them. This is called Swallow Me Whole. It's about 4 minutes long. I'm going to give you a clip of it, and we'll be right back here on PWP Radio.
Above, you show me no mercy, I'll show you no love. You can't prove me wrong, you keep me anxious in the way of harm. Since the beginning of time, we fought the circus, why drain me dry? Stranded with this feeling of hope, sooner or later I'll be here or on my own. Cold winds are coming, I tell you that I feel free. You say that you want me, but I'll prove to you, you don't need me. And when you see that death will come and drip onto my face, you tell me not to worry, there is a much better. Drown me deeper than the voices that I have ever known. And when the light moves, I make sure I watch. Staring back at me, looking me down. Thank you.
ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to PWP Radio. That was Swallow Me Whole from the Ocean Airs. So that's our PWP band. That's a great song. So we're going to move right along. Now, I've been promising this all week long. I think it's a great concept, a great idea. It sucked that Hurricane Sandy got in the way of this because we'd have Will. We'd have other co-hosts tonight to discuss this with me. If anybody's listening and wants to talk about the best Halloween moments in wrestling history, there's a handful of them, folks. Halloween Havoc in WCW was a pay-per-view that started in 1989, ran all the way until the very end of WCW. So there were plenty of great Halloween moments. Please call into the show, 760-888-5749, if you can, if you want to talk to me, if you want to get your voice heard. Get on the air right here, right now. PWP Radio, we're kicking it all night long tonight. I got a two-hour slot here on Blog Talk Radio, and that is fucking awesome. We've gone over Hell in a Cell. We've gone over Raw. Talked about everything going on in the WWE. Maybe we'll get to a little TNA later if somebody wants to call and talk to me about it. I wasn't really too hot on TNA last week, so I don't want to be completely negative and talk to it about it on my own. And, you know, we're just going to keep it going tonight all night long. If you're listening, it's not the prettiest show in the world because it's me talking about myself. But, you know, also you can get the show on iTunes if you missed it tonight. You can get it archived on blogtalkradio.com. But we have a question actually coming in through Facebook. It's from a member of our PWP community. His name is Andy Thompson, and Andy Thompson wants to know, is wrestling still banned in Oklahoma? And I didn't know this off the top of my head if it was or not, but I Googled it real quick. I did what real men do in tough situations, and I found out that, yes, it is still banned in Oklahoma. Wrestling, boxing, MMA, all banned in the great state of Oklahoma. It's an industry that makes money. It just floods money into your economy. Why would you ban it? It makes no sense at all. I'd encourage it. That's why New York needs to get their head out of their ass, and they need to get MMA sanctioned in New York City. Could you imagine Madison Square Garden doing these huge UFC events? It would be absolutely awesome. It'd be extraordinary. Yes, wrestling's still banned in Oklahoma, Andy. Thank you very much for the question. Thanks for listening to PWP Radio. And here we go, folks. It's our Halloween special right here. I think it's a cool concept. You know, a lot of people talk about what's going on at these Halloween Havoc shows, in WWE shows that have had Halloween backgrounds to them, whatever. And my first memory of a Halloween show was Saturday night's main event. I did research. I can't give you the exact date of the show, but they did a Saturday night's main event, and I remember it just from seeing it as a child, where they were dressed up in goofy costumes. I remember the Macho Man dressed up with, like, wearing tiger print or something with Elizabeth, and they had, like, a Halloween party, and it was just 80s cheesiness at its best. And it's my earliest memory of a Halloween gimmick on a show. I remember Vince McMahon and Jesse the Body were also dressed up at the announce position. And Vince is dressed up at the announce position tons of times in the past. I remember when the U.S. government is going after Vince McMahon for steroid use, or giving steroids to the wrestlers. They were trying to take him down. He dressed up as a jailbird. It was absolutely awesome. And he just gave a big middle finger to the U.S. government by doing that live on Monday Night Raw. So it was absolutely awesome. And here's a great moment that Andy Thompson set in. He's hooked up to me on Facebook. You can message me on Facebook if you're listening, folks. Please message me. Talk to me about Halloween Havoc. Talk to me about the greatest moments in Halloween wrestling history. He loved when Diamond Dallas Page countered the Jackhammer at Halloween Havoc 1998, the infamous show that ended early. I'll never forget that show. That is definitely one of the – it was a great moment in the wrestling ring, but it was a bad moment in wrestling history, man. It's one of those things where WCW had no grasp on what they were doing at the time. From all indications, it was absolute chaos backstage and all over every show WCW did. So this pay-per-view, if you don't know the story, ended with the main event in the middle of the main event still taking place. Diamond Dallas Page versus Goldberg, one of the biggest, best matches of all time, especially in the career of fucking Bill Goldberg, who had only like 5 or 10 good matches his entire run. So, yeah, cool moment. It was definitely a good match. Nitro had it live the next night, which was the least they could do. But I know that my mom got on it when I was at the tender age of 13 years old, and she got us a full refund. So I was able to order the next pay-per-view with no problem. So, yeah, that was a great moment. But I'm going to say right now, the biggest moment in Halloween wrestling history. And people, you, if you're listening, you might not like it. And it is John Cena. It was in 2002, Halloween edition of SmackDown. John Cena dresses up as Vanilla Ice. This was the beginning of the hip-hop gimmick. This is what got him over with the crowd once and for all, because before this, he was just plain old John Cena. There was a backstage segment where General Manager Stephanie McMahon was dressed as a witch, which she actually, she probably is a witch, but maybe replace the W with a B. Maybe that she really is, but nah, she's hot anyway. So, you know, backstage, John Cena approaches Stephanie. A little flirting goes on. He's dressed up in all ice gear, busts out an awesome freestyle rap, and the rest is history, folks. They were off to the races. I don't know if this was planned or WWE just stumbled upon it, found out he had this skill to rap, and they went with it, and the rest is history. If he never got that gimmick, if that Halloween moment on SmackDown never happened, we might not have John Cena right now. And if that, you know, is good for you or if it's bad for you, that's your own prerogative. And that, to me, is the absolute biggest moment in Halloween wrestling history. If you agree, disagree, please call in 760-888-5749. But moving along, the first Halloween Havoc, let's talk a little bit about the history. Since we got all night to talk, you know, I'm by myself once again. If you want to call in, be my co-host, please feel free. But the first Halloween Havoc in WCW took place at the Philadelphia Civic Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania in 1989. And it was a concept that was brand new at the time. A Halloween-based pay-per-view had some great, fantastic matches on it. Doom defeated the Steiner Brothers. Lex Luger defeated Brian Pillman to retain his NWA United States Championship, a match that I've seen before that was actually really, really awesome. Another match was the Road Warriors taking on the mean tag team of Sid Vicious and Dangerous Dan Spivey with Teddy Long Playa as their manager. And the Road Warriors fit the Halloween gimmick back then at the time. If I recall, I think they were featured on the poster for the first Halloween Havoc. But the main event of that show was Ric Flair and Sting defeating the Great Muda and Terry Funk. Gary Hart was in their corner. Gary Hart, definitely the type of guy that is underrated as far as managers in wrestling. And this was a Thunderdome match, folks. Yeah, you heard that right. A fucking Thunderdome match. And the referee, the special guest referee of a Thunderdome match in 1989 in WCW was none other than Bruno Sammartino. What the hell are you thinking, WCW? You're going to take Bruno Sammartino in and you're going to use him as the referee in a fucking Thunderdome match? What the hell is wrong with you? Cool moment, though, no matter which way you slice it up. Definitely a cool moment. Halloween Havoc 1990, headlined by Sting, defeating Sid Vicious to retain the belt. I'll never forget this match. Fucking horrible, awful booking. And I know I wanted to talk about the best moments, but this is definitely an infamous moment in Halloween Havoc history. Sting and Sid, there was some kind of botch up at the end, if I can remember. Barry Windham came out or something, disguised as Sting, traded with Sting after Vicious attacked Sting backstage during the match, whatever. Sid won the match, big celebration. The real Sting came back and pinned Sid to retain the title. WCW, man, they had some crazy concepts. But right now, we're going to go to the caller. Thank God you're calling in. We really appreciate it. 706 error code. What's your name? Where you're from? You're on the line with PWP Radio.
Yo, this Abe.
Yo, Abe, what's up, my man? Thank you so much for calling in. I need the help tonight, brother. What do you got to say? We're talking about the best Halloween moments in wrestling history.
Oh, you know, it's funny because I'm a huge WCW fan. This is before I got sorry, like, you know, late 90s, whatever. And I go to the Halloween Havoc in 90, one of the best matches. I don't know if you've seen it, but it was the Steiners versus the Nasty Boys. of 19 on that same pay-per-view. And that one is, I recommend if you're a tag team wrestling fan, that's the whole, that card right there on tag team wrestling is number one as far as I'm concerned. I had about 3 or 4 great tag team matches on it. Flair, Arn versus the Doom, Freebirds. I forgot who they wrestled, but it was a great match, too. That's a great recommendation, I would say, as well. And I didn't know that Sting's vision was that bad. I'm glad you told me. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that match was absolutely... I mean, the match itself was cool, but the ending was fucking pathetic. I mean, and it was just so botched up. I mean, any way, shape, or form, that I'm just going by memory. I haven't seen it in a while, but it's one of those things that just will not get out of your head. It could have been a lot smoother, you know? But, yeah, man, that's awesome. The Steiners and the Nasty Boys. I mean, the Nasty Boys, when they were in WCW, were truly in their prime, right, Abe?
Of course. I mean, this before I even got big, this was the first run. They had a second run in 95. It was 94, wasn't it, the second run?
Yeah, I believe so. This was on the same – this Steiners Nasty Boys match was on the same show that I'm talking about with Sting and Sid.
Yeah, because it's weird because at that time, and I watched this thing about it was about that time I was watching it, and they had the tag team roster. In my opinion, the depth of it was better than WWE as far as from top to bottom. But I mean, if you haven't watched it, they'll tell you they had the talent. It was just a matter of using how they use everybody. But I mean, the Steiners, you had Steiners, you had Nasty Boys, you even had Arn and Flair team up a bit. Doom was a very underrated team. That's a very underrated. It was, by the way, Farouk and Latrice, am I correct?
Yeah, you're right. Yep. Yeah, they at the time, also, I'm looking at the card right now, and you had, on this Halloween Havoc 1990 card, you had Tommy Rich and Ricky Morton defeating the Midnight Express on the card.
Oh,
you
that
had,
was a great match.
Yeah, you had the Freebirds defeating the Renegade Warriors, who was Chris and Mark Youngblood. You also had the Master Blasters, who fucking, I remember those guys. Defeating the Southern Boys of Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong. But, yeah, you're right, man. I'm a huge mark for late 80s and early 90s WCW. It was truly an awesome time in their history.
Oh, no doubt. Can we go into that? You want to go into 92 now a little bit? Or you want to say that for later?
We're free-flowing tonight, Abe. We're going, you know, I hope everything was all right with you from the hurricane, but my area was practically destroyed. I'm extremely lucky to be able to call this show tonight and get on the air, but I haven't been able to get in touch with Will. I know John had a death in the family, and I'm sorry to hear that for John, but he's not going to be able to join us tonight, so I'm glad you called in to join us, Abe. And, yeah, so I want to talk about Havoc 92. What do you got to say about that?
Well, my best wish to go out to everyone in the Northeast area. It's not affecting us in the Northeast right quick as far as the it's yours up there as far as the hurricanes, but I know the Northeast is just terrible right now. Like, I know power hour was gone for a couple of hours, and there's been a lot of deaths going on. So my best wish and best prayers go out to those in dealing with that situation.
Thanks, Abe. Yeah, I've been talking about it on and off all night. Like, I could just take a ride down the road, and a main road in my little town here on the Jersey Shore is completely blocked off with fucking gigantic trees just laying in the middle of the road. And I've seen pictures of the Seaside Heights boardwalk just devastated, and it kind of sucks, really sucks. But all right, so let's move along with the show. Stop dwelling on this. This Halloween Havoc 92 show was the infamous spin the wheel, make the deal show. And I'm glad this 1991 because that was infamous in its own right for what took place on that show. But yeah, going right into 92 Halloween Havoc, what do you got to say about this one, Abe?
Well, I saw that one about, maybe 10 years ago, and I watched the whole show. And I'm going to say something that's going to get me in trouble with the Internet. Brian Pillman and Steamboat had a match. It's on the WWE High Five, which you can buy on Amazon.com at a roundtable store. But anyway, to me, that match, it didn't click. If you watch it, there wasn't excitement. You know, the pinnacle was good, but it wasn't. If you flip it, it wouldn't have grabbed your attention, if you know what I mean by that. And they had Ron Simmons and Barbarian Russell. Now, I like Ron Simmons, but that match was a long match, but that match had no business in pay-per-view, in my personal opinion. It was awful. And also, it happened in part two. I think it was Steve Austin and Dolph Ziggler versus Windham and Rose, right?
Yeah, it was, here, I got it right here in front of me. It was Barry Windham and Dustin Rose fought Steve Williams and Steve Austin to a time limit draw, 30-minute time limit draw there. Austin,
yeah, and everybody said it. Great.
Subbing for Terry Gordy on the show.
Yeah, that's correct. I don't know what was going on, but that was a great match. Everybody's getting rave views now. I'm surprised they didn't go no further with them. Add technically two Steves, you know, both from Texas. I'm surprised they didn't go no further with them. But can you want to go into Jake Roberts and Sting on that? The first venue, it was the Coal Miners Glove match.
Yeah, and that to me is definitely an infamous match in history because I remember this when I was a child. I remember being completely – because I was a big fan of Jake the Snake Roberts in the WWF, obviously, and when he disappeared from WWF television, I wondered where the fuck he went, and I can't remember. I think I read it in the magazine that he was in WCW, and I tuned in to actually see what he was up to, and I was confused. I didn't know – Being a child, 1992, I was only 7 years old or so. So I had no idea what the hell a Coal Miner's Glove was. But obviously now I know. And if you're doing the spin the wheel, make the deal gimmick, why would you go with this, right, Abe?
I know. The thing about it is I like stipulation, but I've never heard, and we may be about the same age, whatever, but have you ever heard of a blank on a pole being a great match? Have you ever heard of that?
No, I don't think there's been any. And if I can, I remember Pinata on a pole. There was, I remember this ridiculous match where in WCW and staying on WCW, it was like Booker T against Jeff Jarrett, and there was just like a bunch of random shit in containers on a pole in each four corners. Absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, I don't remember any fantastic blank on a pole matches.
Oh, and that match, it has the most. I mean, the weird thing was the year before when Randy Savage and Jake the Snake had that great, was when the Snake bit Randy Savage in the arm. This was the opposite, where the Snake, if you've seen, it's the most ridiculous, it looks so stupid, where Jake had the Snake, right? Sting punched Jake in the stomach, and the Snake bit Jake. It was like, are you kidding? And he tried to wiggle it off. It looks so horrible.
Absolutely ridiculous. The match only went 10 minutes, and it was the main event of the show, and it makes me think, was this wheel gimmicked? Was this supposed to be a Coal Miner's Glove match? If you know the answer to that question, please call in and talk to me about it, because I feel like they could have gone in so many different better ways to get the best out of Jake Robertson Sting, but it just didn't seem to happen, you know?
I know, and the weird thing was, I liked their idea of, they ambulated the Scorpion versus the Snake Amphibians, but for some reason, it never, you'd think it'd be a good idea on paper, but it didn't pan out for some odd reason. And I mean, they could have done just, my opinion, just anything goes, maybe a street fight or like revenge or something. I mean, this is ridiculous. But 93, oh my gosh, you talking about excellent card from top to bottom? That's a must-watch pay-per-view. From Cactus Jack, Invader. I mean, have you seen that match before?
Texas
Death Match.
Texas Death Match, yep. There it is, yep. Texas Death Match.
Oh,
yes.
My God. And you think, I just saw it yesterday. I'm sorry, it was Sunday watched it. And it's, one of the best matches I ever seen. Not just Cactus Jack, but just in general fight, because you forget just how good Vader was. But they used ramp a lot, which I like how they used it. And I remember where Harley Race, he had a stun gun. He put it in Cactus Jack's leg and just stunned him to keep him down, which is great heel maneuver. Just great heel stuff was going on. And Vader was the man. He was the champ, but I like how in that match they built up to where he was the first thing to put Cactus out of up there for the year, right?
Yeah.
About 7 months ago?
Yeah.
Because he broke his nose, he busted ribs or something.
Ripped his ear off. He's the reason that Mick Foley lost his ear. He I remember he powerbombed him on the floor, and it was absolutely vicious. I think in the story, Mick Foley lost his mind, and, you know, they had these vignettes where Foley was in some kind of village with a bunch of, I don't know what it was, poor people or something. And they had a newswoman go out and try to find him. And Cactus Jack was had lost his marbles before he came back to WCW. So yeah, this story went on for quite a while.
I know. And another match that was great on that show is underrated, but it's a great gem. Two all-time greats, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Paul Orndorff. Because I remember before that, they mentioned on the show that Orndorff called Steamboat the title to William Regal, Lord Steven Regal, I'm sorry, at that moment. And it was a great fight. It was the first match I saw Steamboat kind of be more of a fight instead of just a more grappling, you know, per match. You know what I mean by that?
Oh, I absolutely do. And these two guys were pivotal in the mid-'80s in the WWF. I mean, Paul Orndorff and Ricky Steamboat could have definitely been a feud in the 80s that could have carried the company at the time, you know? If there was no Hulk Hogan, just think about this. If there was no Hulk Hogan, what two guys would you really want to put against each other to, you know, Orndorff just looked like $1 million his entire career, and Ricky Steamboat was just the best, probably the best babyface of all time. And if you, these guys are just money, and a little known fact, I guess, as I'm reading right here about 93 Halloween Havoc, Paul Orndorff has to replace the injured Yoshi Kwan on this show. So, I mean, you got a great match out of an injury. And Steamboat was counted out after the assassin. Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable endings. But moving on with the next year of Halloween Havoc, this is where, in my opinion, WCW started to go down the tubes just a little bit, right, man? 1994, main event.
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan came into WCW and completely place upside down. But if you look at it this way, and I've got these numbers in front of me because I'm going to tell you guys the truth. I'm on Wikipedia and I'm just checking it out. You know, your attendance in 1992, 7,000. Your attendance at Halloween Havoc 93, 6,000. Your attendance at Halloween Havoc 94 with Hulk Hogan, 14,000 people. So, I mean, look at it that way. Hulk Hogan was still a draw at the time, but Hulk Hogan defeated Ric Flair. Mr. T is the special enforcer. It was a career versus career match, and this was one of the many times that Ric Flair's career ended, huh?
Yeah, I think it was. Wasn't the first retirement. I'm sorry, it was the second time he retired in, I believe, was it 11 months? Because the year before, it was Stark 93. He was in a retirement match. He didn't lose, but it was weird how it was a retirement match, but they said on DVD, I think, He lost. That's his third or fourth match, right? The Hogan, wasn't it? In that year?
They wrestled that whole year, practically. I mean, even Vader didn't want to do the job to Hogan earlier in the summer, and somehow Ric Flair still took the pin at some point in time, you know?
I know, and I heard people say it's a great match. I'm sorry I haven't watched it yet, but everybody says it's a great match. The only MST refereeing it. It was weird because they were trying to go back almost to 1985 in 1994. And you were, I think you were 9 at the time. I might have been 7, whatever. But it's like you can't go. I mean, by the time we were the fans, we already knew about Mr. T and all that stuff. And going back 10 years, almost 10 years later, and almost like trying to act back in '95, it just doesn't work. You can't go back and go forward at the same time. It's kind of weird that we're doing that. Because I remember that. I think it was Flair. Didn't Flair had Misty handcuffed or something?
If I recall, I don't remember the specifics of this match because I think the only time I ever watched it was actually in 1994. I know I watched this match when I was a child because I was a Hulkamaniac through and through. When he went to WCW, I went there with him. And I know that from reading what's going on here that Brutus Beefcake got involved at the end and he was stalking Hogan and that's how that feud started up. But I'm not sure exactly the specifics of the match, but I just want to talk about for a second how you look at WCW in 1993 and the quality of the roster and the quality of the matches and in the early 90s in general. But then you look at 1994 and you got Jim Duggan on the card defeating Steve Austin. You got Vader defeating the Big Boss Man. You got Terry Funk and Buckhouse Buck as a tag team. The Honky Tonk Man, Johnny B. Badd and the Honky Tonk Man had a time limit draw. Like, come on, you know, you could just tell WCW was starting to change at this point in time.
And not in a good way. It's good to change, but when you – they were almost trying to just get anybody. Like, I remember Eric Bischoff said on the DVD one time, The Warrior, they're just signing everybody. And this was before they started signing guys from international. They were just trying to sign names. And at that point, I mean, you talking about going for roster change. It wasn't for the better. They just tried to get names to go in to get draw names, but – it wasn't a good idea. I think a lot of it on that card, I understand wanting to get, like, Hogan, which is a great idea to do, but to go with the Honky Tonk Man and all guys past their prime, nobody care about. I mean, I like having such Jim Duggan. I don't know if you do or not, but I like the guy.
Oh, I don't mind.
But it hadn't been.
Duggan, but he wasn't exactly your WCW typical wrestler back then, you know, in the early 90s.
Yeah, I mean, let me go off the top a little bit, but they're more of a wrestling company. Like, if you go back to 85 to that, I'll say 93-ish, they were still based on wrestling, you know, in-ring quality and being the better wrestling against up north. And they had become the North, and that did not work. And do you know the numbers as far as, like, pay-per-view buy rates on it?
Well, I'm on Wikipedia, so you just never know how accurate these numbers are. But, no, there's no pay-per-view buy rates. I don't think they released that kind of stuff back then in 1994.
Yeah, it was bad. If they don't release it, then it was bad.
But, hey, moving along, I know we're going, you know, step by step through WCW Halloween Havoc, which is fine. I mean, this is free-flowing conversation here on PWP Radio. I got my man Abe on the line. Thanks again for calling in. If you'd like to call in and get in on the conversation, please call the number 760-888-5749. This is the first time we're going live into the second hour right here tonight. Hit me up on Twitter at PW Powerhouse if you got anything to say at all, or find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse if you want to talk about WCW Halloween Havoc and the best moments in Halloween wrestling history. And I'm not going to say that this was the best moment, Abe, but the next month is when we got the monster truck match. The sumo between Hulk Hogan and not the Big Show, but the Giant. And
son of a giant.
It's insane bullshit that WCW was starting to pull at the time, the Doom, and just going in a completely different direction from what they were in the previous few years. Turned out to be the right move because, you know, they still had great wrestlers on the card, you know. You had Chris Benoit was coming in at this point. Malenko was on the card. Orndorff still there. Regal. This is when Regal and Bobby Eaton were a tag team, I believe. DDP was moving. Yeah. Savage is out there. And, you know, also on this card, Sting and Ric Flair defeated Pillman and Anderson by DQ. That had to have been a good match. I don't recall it. But
you know what happened in that match? Oh, sorry.
Tell us. Go for it.
There was a swerve in that match. Do you know about that?
No, I don't. I have no idea. Go for it. Let us know.
Oh, okay. I remember that it was going weeks into it. Flair and Arn and Flair had a feud going on, going back to the summer of that year. And if Arn brought him up before, Arn beat Flair because Pillman interfered on behalf of Arn. So what they did was had a tag match, and Flair asked Sting to be his partner. And Sting said, if you turn on me, I'll kill you there or something. And guess what happened?
Flair turned on him. Now I'm remembering, right? Flair turned on him?
Yes. And the crowd erupted. Like, he was doing Ric Flair walking around, like, and a Sting had beat up and punched, and he thought punching Arn, he punched Sting, the crowd went nuts, and they beat him up so bad. And the next night, they formed a Horseman.
Oh, yeah.
The next month.
That's right. Yeah, that's absolutely awesome. This match, this card was stacked, actually, Abe. Yeah, Luger defeating Meng. Yeah, Sabu, he was on the card. He defeated Mr. JL. And
Jerry Lynn.
Yeah, who's Jerry Lynn. And the Sheik, the Sabu's uncle, threw a fireball in the face of Mr. JL. That had to have been a moment. I kind of want to go on YouTube and look it up right now. But chaos happened at the end with the Giant defeating Hulk Hogan by DQ. Yada, yada, yada.
You mean
whatever.
The DP on Hogan? You mean the Hogan DP? Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
this is the whole joke. You've seen that. If you still what we're talking about, you've seen the match, you know exactly what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Total. Like, this match was an absolute mess. You remember, right, Abe? It was
yes, I watched. Yes, because I remember the half the Doom came out, right? It was at the end, I don't know if we got knocked out. And Jimmy Hart was Hogan's manager. He turned on him, and I think Luger came out during that match. And he turned on Hogan, too, but it was the most bizarre. It was almost like cluster, the worst of the worst. It was too random going on. I forgot how Giant pinned Hogan, whatever, but it was ridiculous. Sash came out and Luger twice ratted him. And I remember it was more booze, anything going on. It was horrible. Awful.
It was, and this is that infamous moment that everybody remembers, a fucking wrestle crap moment for the ages where Tony Schiavone goes, it's the Yeti. Like, what the
fuck? The
Gigantic Mummy starts walking down to the ring, who is Reese later on in WCW. You found out a member of the Flock. Gigantic, 7'4", whatever. And just, like, puts Hulk Hogan in this fucking bear hug that, what exactly was he doing? It looked like it was, if you told me that was the Hogan sex tape, I'd believe you.
Oh, my gosh. He made Johnny was going to town. A Hogan sandwich, to say the least.
Yeah. Definitely. That was a rough crap moment for the ages. it was sure as hell WCW booking in the 90s. But let's move on to better moments. And I'm going to skip ahead a couple of Halloween Havocs. And I want to talk about 1997, where you had one of the better feuds of all time. And I'll put this up there because, you know, the Macho Man Randy Savage has a place in my heart, is one of my favorite wrestlers ever. And he'll always be a guy that I'll remember as just one of the all-time greats. And his feud with Diamond Dallas Page, man. And Page thanks him to this day for making him, because Randy Savage literally made DDP. And this was one of the matches that really provided a great moment in both of their careers, where they squared off in a Las Vegas sudden death match. And, you know, brutal. Like, these guys fought Spring Stampede, I believe, earlier in the year. They had three big matches that year, and each one had a lot of heat behind it. But Randy Savage came out victorious, and it was like a last man standing match. The only way to win the match was to have your opponent not answer the referee's 10 count. So it was a spin on the last man standing. But yeah, Savage over DDP, and it was a great moment, right?
Oh, of course. I mean, it's funny because you brought that up, and for some reason, I always wonder why that match, why their whole feud is not on DVD yet. I saw the Great American Bash match they had a few months before that, and it was awesome too. And I mean, they fought through the stage. Didn't they go through the stage or something during that match?
Yeah, man. This was absolutely brutal. Every time they fought each other, they beat the living shit out of each other, you know?
Yeah, somebody got hurt. Like, someone was on the shelter a month or two, like, right after that match. It's like, that's how intense it was when someone goes on the shelf and, like, loses a body part, then you know this is, like, this is my personal stuff. And that's what got drawn in, because the energy was there. Even they had their girlfriends involved. And you can just feel the energy in the match and just the intensity. The crowd was into it. It was awesome.
Yeah, this was in the prime of the NWO run. I know the previous year at Halloween Havoc was when Piper made his big debut for WCW, and that was just a great moment. But I hated it because Hulk Hogan defeated Savage, and he always defeated Savage, so it wasn't a big threat. But the NWO run started in 1996, and it really helped Halloween Havoc in 1997 because a lot of stuff came full circle, because the main event, you know, Piper debuts in 1996, and the main event of 1997 is Piper against Hogan in a steel cage, and it looks like WCW continued with these cages as the main event Havoc, and Piper defeated Hogan with the sleeper. And in this match, Randy Savage, now this was kind of a swerve, because Savage and Hogan were on and off hating each other the entire time in the NWO when they were in it together. And Savage came out and jumped off the top of the cage and beat down Piper. So it was just an NWO beatdown, like what happened just time and time again in WCW. And that was a big problem in WCW as a whole, is you always had that NWO beatdown to rely on, right?
Yeah, I watched this DVD a lot, especially from 96 to about 2000. And they were doing a lot of beatdowns. So what made that beatdowns interesting was it wasn't the stage where, okay, we know that's what's going to happen. It wasn't every match they were in. It was the big matches. Like if Hall and Nash were in one, or Savage or Hogan, that's when the beatdowns would come in. And it wasn't like three guys. It was the main six doing it. And the Osprey, the NWO, which I found really just, it add more insult to injury, and that's what made their beatdowns really good. It was very, it wasn't every match. It was very, like, in particular, it's very well organized. I liked how, and maybe you can understand this, when they beat up somebody, it wasn't, okay, we're just going, it was on guys that they knew could be a threat. It's a big beatdowns around that. Almost in a sign where we're not afraid to go against anybody as we got to gang up against yours.
Yeah, man, and it was definitely a turning point in WCW when that started happening on a consistent basis. We already talked a little about the 1998 Halloween Havoc with the infamous pay-per-view ending early. You know, it was a really, really good show. I mean, you had this Hogan and Ward. I mean, it was kind of pathetic of a match, but it was something that I definitely was looking forward to as a mark. But you had other great matches. You were looking, yeah, of course, we were all looking forward to it. You had Jericho defeating Raven. You had, I believe, what else was on the card? Yeah, it was that big night where the Giant went to the top rope and tried the
dropkick.
Yeah, and Rick Steiner. And you had Rick Steiner and Buff Bagwell defeating the Giant Scott Steiner for the WCW Tag Team titles. But I believe this was the night where Bagwell turned on him. And Rick Steiner, like, beat the Giant and got on his own. I believe so. Am I wrong?
No, I think that match became a handicap match because I think that was turned on Steiner, but Steiner still won the belt, so I'm accurate. If I'm not, someone please call in this and let us know.
Yeah, if you want to call in, 760-88-5749. We got a little bit of time left here on PWZ Radio tonight. Once again, we're going at it, and we're doing our best to provide you with something entertaining, something to hopefully get you through your day if you're going through a tough time with the hurricane or whatever. You can please go to iTunes and download us tomorrow. Give us some positive feedback. Hit that comment button. Type in whatever you want. Give us 5 stars maybe. Do anything you can to support our group and our community. I'm trying to make this fun for all wrestling fans, but the show must go on here tonight, and we're talking about WCW Halloween Havoc because, quite frankly, WCW provided most of the great Halloween moments in wrestling. I mean, WWE had a few. I brought up John Cena's debut earlier on. We had definitely some great moments, once again, WCW. And also on this 1998 card, going back to that, Abe, you had Bret Hart defeating Sting and for the WCW United States Heavyweight title, and that was pretty fucking cool because it was sharpshooter versus sharpshooter. Goldberg DDP was awesome as well. We got to see it on Nitro instead of the actual pay-per-view. But in 1999, we had what was considered, like I would say, a dream match. And I can't recall if this was the first time it happened, but in 1999 is when WCW really started, I guess, coming off its hinges a little bit. Things started to get crazy with the booking and with the scenario, Abe. And on this card you had, in the middle of the show, Sting defeats Hulk Hogan to retain the WCW title because Hogan laid down, he was injured. But backstage, there was probably something going on where Hogan did not want to, you know, put Sting over, whatever. And then later on, you had Goldberg defeat Sid Vicious for the United States title. And then at the end,
the bloodbath.
That's what it was. Yeah, a complete bloodbath. And at the end, though, you had Goldberg and Sting back out there, unsanctioned match, and Goldberg defeats Sting for the title. So it's in some haphazard way, you get the belt from, it starts out with a Sting-Hogan match, turns to a Goldberg-Sting match later in the night, and Goldberg's your WCW Heavyweight Champion. I mean, this is really when you take booking a pay-per-view and a show, and it just shows you what was going on in this Attitude Era of 1999, and it really proves you that WCW is coming off its fucking hinges, right?
I know, and this one made it more stupid for me. He won the title, but the next night, they null and void it. It's like, well, it wasn't promoted, it wasn't like gone and clad, it was for the title, so went to the tournament. That right there really got me PO'd about that. Because if you're going to do a title change, correct me if I'm wrong, we're NFL fans, correct?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, can you imagine going to the Super Bowl and let's say the Giants beat the Patriots again for the third time, and they hold the trophy up, and you know that Super Bowl is not for Lombardi Trophy, so it don't count. You know, you
insanity.
That was horrible.
Real quick, I want to get to a buddy of ours in the PWP community, who's a listener, and he called in a few weeks ago and gave us some information on a Ring of Honor show. Steven Marquez is talking to me right now on Facebook, and I'm doing a million things, so I'm not responding. But I am reading, Steven, and he's letting me know about Halloween Havoc 1999, that it was the first pay-per-view that Vince Russo was in charge of. And when he came in, he rewrote the entire pay-per-view the week it happened. And that, I guess, explains to us why this was such a clusterfuck.
So, and the weird thing was, like, it should have been better. I remember one thing memorable for me was Dean Malenko turn on You-Know-Who. He was wrestling Rick Steiner for the, I think it was TV belt or something. And that was the first turn Malenko did on him. And that was it could have been a real big deal, but they did nothing with it outside a cage match a week later and a headbutt, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think a Benoit Dean Malenko feud would have been really awesome at the time, but WCW, like Steven just told us, was being run by Vince Russo, and he didn't have the first clue of what to do with these great talents. I mean, once again, you have this stacked roster. You look at this card in 1999, you got Eddie Guerrero and Perry Saturn in a match. You got Rick Steiner and Chris Benoit in a match. Luger versus Bret Hart. Sting Hogan, Goldberg Sid, DDP and Flair. Just this talent, Hall of Fame talent up and down, but somehow Vince Russo decides to have a big, you know, fuck up, big clusterfuck. And that's just how it kept going in Howling Havoc, and moving on to the year 2000, where Howling Havoc placed once again at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. And I don't remember this card at all. Abe, do you remember this card?
I remember two or three. Now, it was a big match at the time in the company. It was Chronic of Brian Adams and Brian Clark versus Goldberg. And you would think on paper, this sounded really good with what I've read. It was not. Because Goldberg's streak at the time was on the line where if he loses, he'll automatically get fired. Like, he was starting his streak over again. But if he loses, he'd get fired. So you would think, man, it's a good match on paper because it kind of built it, in my opinion, in a good way. And it wound up not being good. It was, when I heard, atrocious. And also, it was the first Steiner booking match for the world title. And they both sound like pretty good going into it, because he beat Goldberg in a great match the month before at War, I think it was Fall Brawl, against Booker. And he beat him, I think he lost or won by DQ or something. It was kind of weird. The only good match on that card was Chavo Guerrero versus Juventud. Really, that's the only thing. I'm sorry, there's one more. It was Hugh Morris versus Lance Storm.
They put on great matches every time they were in there, from what I recall, Hugh Morris and Lance Storm. They had a great run in WCW back then.
Yeah, because they fought three times for the U.S. belt, and Lance Storm was hot at that time. I mean, he was a Triple Crown champion. And I think, I don't know whether he lose that match or not. I know for the belt. And I'm sorry, it was him versus Jim Duggan and Lance Storm, I'm sorry, for a Canadian championship, which is, in my opinion, was a cool idea. Because do you remember anybody, like, being, let's say, Japanese, going for a title and they changed it to their country?
No, that I don't remember happening. Absolutely not.
But it was a cool idea. He changed the belt to the United States title to the Canadian championship. And it was a cool idea. He changed all three to the Canadian championship. He was hot, I think. I'm trying to figure out, was there any of the Stipper Russ on that show? He had the Cruiserweight, I believe, at the time, something like that. But they had the talent. You would think the match would be good, but they did not deliver for reasons I don't understand.
Yeah, looking at this card up and down, I have it in front of me. The Goldberg Chronic match, it was elimination style, and it looked, to me, the concept is awesome. You got Goldberg, who is obviously your top guy. And I'm not sure if Halloween Havoc 2000, if Kevin Sullivan was booking it, or if Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff at the time were. I really don't know.
Oh, they were gone by that point. Russo was gone by that point.
So I don't know who was in charge. Maybe it was Nash. I really don't know at this point. But the concept of Goldberg trying to restart his undefeated streak and going against Chronic, who were just a badass tag team, just a pair of guys who – were so similar in stature and look, and it was cool, man. Although the match, as you said, it was a clusterfuck. It was only 3 minutes and 30 seconds long, so you really can't be too hard on it because they just kind of did what they had to do. And that was the final Halloween Havoc of all time, because if you think about it, just a few short months later, WCW was no more. And that was the end of the Halloween Havoc pay-per-view once and for all. And I think it's a concept that WWE should consider bringing back.
I'm surprised one show that this is a DE, if you don't want to bring it up, was No Mercy 2002. And if you watch the car from Dr. Bomb, it made me think of Halloween a lot of ways as far as just how they presented the show, like how the intro was. Even like, I remember the Hell in the Cell. It was a brutal match. And the way, if you saw a lot of, maybe at the time in November, that would have been a perfect Halloween pay-per-view because it wasn't gimmick, like, pumpkin crap. It was more like, how can I describe it? They had stuff where it'd be really cool for Halloween, the concepts and everything like that. It would have been a great, in my opinion, I'm surprised they never put it on Halloween. It was on a Sunday. I remember they did Save Our Massacre, and then they did Halloween pay-per-view, which surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that 100%. I mean, I would think that WWE would have taken advantage more of the Halloween holiday. There was moments, like before I mentioned Vince dressing up as a jailbird, which was pretty fucking awesome because the big fuck you to the U.S. government. John Cena and a Rapper gimmick kind of coming into play. But in my mind, there just aren't that many moments that stand out. I know last year WWE had the Muppets on Raw in kind of a Halloweenish episode, but overall, I mean, what really sticks out in my mind were these diva matches where they dress up the divas in these goofy costumes and have them have battle royals and stuff like that. But as far as WWE taking advantage of maybe a gimmick like The Undertaker or Kane to use with Halloween, they really didn't do that too much, you know?
I know, and you think the marketing WWE has, which is, in my opinion, the top, one of the greatest of all time, that they'd be masters of just doing Halloween stuff. I mean, just costumes alone, I mean, it'd be unbelievable if they wanted to do that. Just on, let's say, do a Raw or SmackDown like on the time, I'm surprised they never used that to kind of just move the Halloween. I remember watching Raw last night. You saw Mysterio's outfit last night on Raw?
That was actually really cool, man. I dug that. That was outfit.
Yeah, I mean, like, just on the idea, like, they use a lot of masks and a lot of colorful outfits nowadays. I mean, that'd be a cool idea for Halloween, like, especially nowadays, just go back to that kind of idea. Even go back to the 80s, I do not remember them using a lot of that kind of stuff as far as, like, Halloween, like, any costumes or any, like, kind of gimmicks or anything like that.
Yeah, they really haven't. I know there was a gimmick, a luchador wrestler in WCW named Halloween. And then there's Hallow Wicked on the independent scene and stuff like that. So wrestling has absorbed the Halloween gimmick from time to time in other aspects besides WWE and WCW. They also, there's independent shows throughout the country that have a Halloween gimmick to it. They run on or around Halloween with a cool name of some sort, which I'm sure it's pretty played out by now, but it probably puts butts in the seats, so to speak. And it's good whenever people are making money in wrestling. If they got to use Halloween, they got to use Thanksgiving, whatever it is good to make money in the professional wrestling business. But Abe, this is going to end our Halloween special. Thanks a lot for calling in tonight, man. I really appreciate it. I couldn't have done this without you.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure. And also, you don't mind, like, you want me to give you a suggestion offline or you want to do it now?
No, give me a suggestion, man. We're wide open here on PWP Radio.
Well, you know, considering next month's going to be November and considering it'll be Survivor Series, a little contest I think maybe we can do for the fans a little bit. Name your fantasy Survivor Series team, but instead of just saying Team Rose or Team Hogan, make up a name. Like, let's say Dash and Cody Rhodes had a team. Use it, let's say, being like Smokey Mirrors or something. Like, get creative with it. Let's do that.
I like that, Abe. I like that a lot, man. And think about that and put it up in our group page, and I'm sure everybody will get on that, man. And even if you want to pull in some of the other groups, like Wrestling Roundtable Group, I know you're a member over there, and a lot of our members are back and forth with, you know, Wrestling Roundtable and us. And as you know, I'm a former member of the Wrestling Roundtable, but I have a lot of respect for my friend Eric and everybody over there. So if you want to bring that over there too, absolutely do it. I think it's a great idea, great concept, and there's a lot of things. There's a great future here for Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, and we're going to keep it going strong right here. And thanks a lot for joining us tonight, Abe. I really appreciate it, man.
No question. It's my pleasure. You have a wonderful night, and let's hope everything gets better.
All right. Thanks, Abe. Take care. You too, man. So thanks to Abe. I couldn't have done this on my own. I mean, Abe called in and saved my ass tonight, and that's our Halloween special show. I had told Lowell Swain, who's a member of our group as well, to call in, but I'm going to put the ixnay on that. I'm going to end the show now. Once again, thoughts and prayers go out to everybody affected by Hurricane Sandy. It's been a crazy couple days here at the Jersey Shore. We just did not know what was going to happen here at my house. We've got giant trees all over the place. If one happened to fall the wrong way, who knows what kind of damage could have taken place. But I'm lucky. There's a lot of people out there who aren't as lucky. And like I said, I am open to helping anybody who fucking needs it. I'm dead serious about this. So hit me up on Facebook, on Twitter, at PW Powerhouse, wherever. I will help you. I will do whatever I can to help people in this time of need. Thoughts go out to those who have been affected. And thanks, Dave, for calling in. Thanks for everybody who listened tonight. I know it probably didn't have a great live listening numbers, but that's fine. Make sure tomorrow night you check out Oh You Didn't Know Radio, starring our buddy Seth. And he's got a big interview with Too Cocky Kevin Matthews, who is the current Pro Wrestling Syndicate champion. And Seth and I are both going to Pro Wrestling Syndicate coming up November 9th in Rahway, New Jersey. PWS is going to have Matt Hardy in a match, a six-man match with Davey Richard at the same time, involving a few other great independent wrestlers. Kevin Steen will take on Sammy Callahan. You're going to have Jerry Lynn versus Colt Cabana, and Kevin Matthews himself, who will be a guest tomorrow night right here on the PWP Radio Network at 9 o'clock, will be going one-on-one with Mr. fucking Belden, Saved by the Bell. So that should be interesting. Nonetheless, thanks for joining us here tonight on PWP Radio. Check us out on iTunes. We need you to subscribe. We need you to leave a comment, rate the show. 5 stars would be nice. Go to our Amazon store, buy WWE 13. I put links out there today. Support the show in any way you can. Go to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Click around, you know, do what you can in that aspect. We're trying to, you know, pay for this show in any way, shape, or form. So click around a little bit. Me not telling you what to do. But also check out our groups on Facebook, at PW Powerhouse on Twitter. That's all the plugs I got for you. We didn't make 2 hours. We got 18 minutes left, but I'm going to end the show now because I'm the boss and I can fucking do that. So for Abe Freeman, thanks again. This has been our Halloween special. Enjoy your Halloween. Thanks a lot, everybody, and keep it real.
He's a man.